We're going to talk about the Trusted Partner Network. Ultimately, this is an initiative that we've been working on along, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce the board of directors and the team that has been working on Trusted Partner Network. Come on up, Ben. You were the first up here. Let's go. It's not an order of importance, believe me. But you are very important. Come on in and have a seat. Kurt, how are you? Welcome. Come on in. How many of you know about the Trusted Partner Network? Oh, thank goodness. All right, only four people raised their hand. We got to work that out for us. Okay, so I am moderating this panel. We're going to start serving drinks here very shortly. With the minute that they're ready, we'll obviously don't rush to the bar, but it's Las Vegas. We figured alcohol would do good for this conversation. But we're introducing the Trusted Partner Network. We announced it on Monday. We've gone through phases, and essentially this is the executive team that has been put together by our respective associations, and we're here to explain to you more about it. I will say, if you've got questions as we're coming through, we do have a little piece because each of us have a very unique and distinct role in the Trusted Partner Network, and I'm going to let these gentlemen introduce themselves and also talk about their day job. But the reality is, we're here to really answer your questions and have an open dialogue. There's been a lot of careful, considered infrastructure building negotiations over these last couple of years. But this is really your chance to dig deep. So to start it off, I'd like to introduce Dan Robinson. Dan, tell us a little bit about yourself. Long walks on the beach at Pisces.
It's great. Well, I know we're in the unenviable position of standing between everyone and the bar,
yes. As
Guy has pointed out. So I'm Dan Robbins. I'm the president and the chairman of the board of this new organization. I have a day job in the Motion Picture Association. I'm the senior vice president and associate general counsel. I've been there a while and been involved in some of our other successful joint venture work. My very first job was to come in, and my boss said, you know, there's these people, they want to move content off of great VHS tapes, put it on this shiny polycarbonate disc, it's going to fail, but you're the new guy, so get on it. So that was my introduction. That turned out reasonably well for all of us, and we've done some other joint ventures over the years, and so I'm very excited to be part of this one. We've got, I think, some great opportunities to deliver real value to everyone that's in the ecosystem, the vendors, the content providers, the assessors, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Awesome.
Kurt?
Hi, my name is Kurt Fisher, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the new entity, the Trusted Partner Network. My day job is heading up the Content Security Organization for the Motion Picture Association of America, and I've been bouncing around this industry for about 30 years and really excited to be part of this.
Ben.
Hey, Neil. Ben Stanbury, Information Security Officer for Walt Disney Studios. I look after the content security and information security programs there, and CTO for the new Trusted Partner Network.
And your role as CTSA.
And chairman of the CTSA. Three times in one.
That's right.
By the way, it's like me, right? You know, next thing you know, it's like we have all these business cards. It's like, what happened? I learned today. Okay, and I'm Guy Finley. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Trusted Partner Network. I'm also the Executive Director of the CDSA, and I'm also the Executive Director and Founder of Mesa, Media and Entertainment Services Alliance. So, we have a deck for you that we prepared specifically for this. We have a website, obviously, since we launched it on Monday, ttpn.org. You'll see it at the end of this. But we prepared this deck really as an introduction and an overview for you. Now, some of these are eye charts, so we may not be total letter to the law. It's really about us having a conversation. We've talked so much about this, especially in the last 60 days, right? We're almost all sick of each other, but it's been a lot of work. And it's really been a pleasure to work with this team. You know, what we assembled it going in, we knew that we, you know, both of our respective constituency, we knew we had to do this. But what really has impressed me in my role is how we've all taken a kind of a piece and become the authority of the TPN for that piece. I need a clicker. Sorry, Ben, it's right up there with you. See, look at this. This is how we do it. Collaboration.
Seamless.
Thank you. So we started the deck, and Dan, I'm gonna pass this clicker to you. So Dan, as as we get going, let's start off and let's just start plowing through this a little bit. And again, if you've got a question, raise a hand. We'll break and we'll give you a little chance to jump in and pipe in on our conversation.
Okay, very good. I think the most important thing to realize is that our goal is the same as your goal. What we're trying to do is enhance security in our ecosystem. None of us wants to see any of our members or customers' products out on the internet. We all want to reduce the likelihood of something being hacked or some kind of breach. And so that's the fundamental purpose of this entity. We're trying to raise the bar. What you'll see throughout the deck, though, is we've got some other benefits. There's places we plan to enhance competition. There's places we plan to enhance quality. There's places we plan to enhance efficiency. And I think all of you will benefit from those to one degree or another. So that's one of the reasons we're so excited about what we're doing. But those are sort of the details. The main point is we're trying to further help lock this thing down so none of us, so all of us can sleep better at night. So this is a joint venture. When we approached this, we recognized that the MPAA and the CDSA have various comparative advantages. There's things that each of us do particularly well, and by teaming up, we can take advantage of those. I think on the MPAA side, we've been around since 1922. We've been a part of many joint ventures that have been successful. In the 20s, we established a title registration bureau to make sure film titles weren't confusingly similar. In the 60s, we helped invent the rating system with our partners in exhibition, and that's done well. You know, we helped with the DVD in the mid-90s. Recently, we helped formulate the ACE joint venture as well to help combat piracy. So we feel like we've got a lot of experience there. We also worked in the content security area as well. We established best practices, and Guy and the folks at CDSA have given us a lot of good input into those. And that's a dynamic document that's publicly available for folks, and that's gonna be, we'll describe how that's an integral piece of what we're doing. But that's part of our experience. And my colleague Kurt has overseen many, many audits that we've conducted as well. So we bring all that piece to the table. You know, what we lack is a number of things. We don't have the type of footprint that Guy has. We don't have the strong connection with a lot of smaller studios, the strong connection with lots of folks in the vendor community. And through the technology committee that we just talked, Jacqueline chairs, you bring that to the table. And also the interaction with the smaller studios. And this is really critical because it's not something where we, you know, the MPAA just got together and said, oh, this is what we're gonna do to benefit ourselves. We really wanna benefit the whole industry. So we felt a partnership was a much better way to go and we'd get a better product. Well, and then also, of course, you've run your own auditing program and, you know, Guy's got at least, 10 years of experience with the CPS?
Yep, almost 10 years, almost 10.
Okay. So that's yes. You know, that's also highly relevant. So it's a synergy, we're trying to bring all that together.
22 years of assessing, but particularly content protection, it's only been less.
Okay. I don't want to sell you short.
No, that's right, exactly.
Anyway, I'm the lawyer, he's the comms guy, so.
I think I'm the touchy-hucky-feely guy.
I'm the cold one. So in any event, there's a lot on this slide, but we're going to get into some details as we go through, but let me tell you about some critical pieces. One of the things that we really want to do is we want to raise the level of assessor skill in the market and make it uniform. And I think that benefits everybody. So we are, as part of our program, we're running an assessor accreditation program. So if you're an assessor and you want to participate, you can submit an application, we'll review your skills. If you've been doing this for a while, you've got good skills, you can come take an exam. And if you pass, then you'll this is the short version, Kurt will tell you more about it, but you'll be in the platform that we're going to be utilizing. And there's a couple benefits to that. It helps bring the quality level up across the board. And also, we want this to be a global program. So if you're a studio or you're a vendor and you need an assessment to occur in Mumbai on short order, we're hoping when we're fully out there and mature that you'll have 5 assessors you can choose from. And you can go to our platform and you'll have choice. And in addition to that, you'll have competition. You'll have 5 folks there who will, you can make compete for your work, so you'll get a better price, a lower cost. And you'll know, because they participated in our program, that you know they're solid. And so this is our goal. We just did an audit, or assessment, sorry, of earlier this year, and we flew somebody to India, and it's costly. And they come back, and they really can't do much useful for a couple of days. And you know, it's so we're trying to get rid of some of that as well in the process. So that's a key piece. Also, we're going to have a vendor roster in our TPN system. So we hope to list all the vendors, and we hope everybody gets an assessment. And so when a studio wants to do the same kind of project in Mumbai or somewhere else, that they can look and say, oh, well, there's somebody who does post there, and look, they've had an assessment, and so we know they're secure. And so this will give some added visibility to folks in the vendor community, and it would give added confidence to the studios to make more connections. And I think that'll be very helpful as well. I don't want to take away too many details from my colleagues, but another thing we hope to do is we'll go through this, or two things rather, we'll go through this system, and these assessments will happen over time. And one of the things we want to do is we want to send targeted risk advisories out. So if there's an assessment done at a facility and it's using version X of software Y, and now there's X plus one, and we see that there's a real threat, you know, we want to tell you about it. We want to get that information out there so you can do the upgrade and not be vulnerable. You know, we want to spread the good word so we're all more secure. And I think the last piece, which I think is another good benefit, is we're also trying to squeeze out some of the inefficiencies that we have in our current system. So today it's possible that Studio X will want to assess Vendor Y in January, and you know, Studio B will want to do the same thing in May, and Studio K will want to do the same thing in August. It's completely wasteful. So one of the things we want to do in our platform is studios can look and say, oh, well, I'd like to use Vendor X in Berlin, and they were audited 2 months ago, and give me confidence. You know, it may not eliminate the need for some kind of follow-up, because maybe the services are a little bit different or there's something else, but at a minimum, it's going to reduce the duplication. So our goal is just to have one assessment per facility every year, not 2, 3, 4, 5, or Lord knows 6 or 7. We want to wring that out so that we can save everybody here cost. So that's sort of the high level. Sorry if I went on too long.
No, great. That's okay.
He's the comms guy, I'm the lawyer, I get paid by the word, so.
Well,
so true.
I think also, you know, that whole idea, so the CDSA program, right? Again, this is taking the best bits of both of our organizations, right? Because the CDSA program was well established. You know, over the years we've had hundreds of facilities, but it was a very solid number that people got used to it. And the nice thing is an assessment is a snapshot in time, right? But the reality is if you've got that snapshot in time and somebody comes and says, oh, hey, by the way, I see you're certified, can I give this to you? That was always one of the huge bonuses of the CESA as opposed to the NPA, was that shareability. Because once we figured you purchase that assessment, that's your audit report, you get to give it to whomever. because it was yours. I think that's one of the critical things also that comes through in the TPN is taking that best bit. Now, granted, we don't certify as the TPN. I think that's also very important. The NPA administers a logo program, right? And you're good at administering logo programs. But the idea is if you're displaying the Trusted Partner Network logo, the content community, the content creation community will know, oh, they can't display that logo without being in the platform, right? Without being in vendor roster. And it gives them the tick to go, hey, let me go into vendor roster. When's the last time they were visited? What was the assessor that visited them? Because, again, we'll get into the assessor piece, and this is leading up to you, Kurt, so you're going to need to click on it. But I think that's the whole point, is you own it. You control it in a sense that it's giving the vendor responsibility for their own facility to say, I want to proactively do this. I want to be engaged and involved. And we'll go into some of the other details further down the line when we get to that. But let's talk about, I think, what is probably, I'm out of order. Apologies, I'm going in this order. So before we get into the qualified assessor program, which is absolutely critical to the process, let's talk about that platform. Let's talk about some of the technology that TPN is bringing to this industry. Ben Stanbury.
So over the last 4 years, we've developed a platform and a series of distinct interfaces for the system. Obviously, we have to practice what we preach. We need to, data security, data privacy, regulatory compliance requirements have to be paramount to us. So this is ultimately where we've landed. There's a back-end administrative platform, the GRC admin portal, the auditor app. So when Kurt talks about the qualified assessor program, all of those qualified assessors will receive a piece of software and they can conduct their, they receive all of the information, all of the pre-audit packet through that app. No information should ever traverse outside of the system. Nothing's traversed, no sensitive information over email, no sensitive audit information in a Word document or a PDF that's loosely moving around. That was one of our initial objectives, to create a closed loop. If there's a prompt for any of these interfaces, it's an email that just says there's an action, there's a task ready for you, please sign into your multi-factor authenticated portal. Once you're signed in, data will be entered, maintained, sanitized, and so forth. So we're going to talk in a second about that closed ecosystem and what the sequence of events are and what some of the delineation at a high level, what some of the delineation of responsibilities are between the CDSA, the NPA, the qualified auditors, and so forth. But when a vendor is prompted to fill in their pre-audit questionnaire or to respond to remediation, a non-conformity or remediation task, they log into their vendor portal. And as both Dan and Guy mentioned, content owners have this very, very simple, very user-friendly database that they can reference. Either what is the status of vendor X that I want to use, or show me all of the approved vendors or the eligible vendors that provide the following set of services in the following geographic location or whatever filters you want to apply. And that's a really nice way, rather than coming to a conclusion about which partner they want to use, maybe they just the first thing they do is check the database and they see they have a selection of 5 or 10 partners they can pick to work with that are eligible and ready to go.
Before you move on, I think this is also very critical because this slide also illustrates some of the segmentation that we do. So the TPN platform is for us, right? MPA, CDSA, it's for the governance. We provision people onto it. It's where our teams work for quality assurance, quality control. The TPN app is just for assessors. That's where they perform the actual audit themselves, right? There's no more pen and paper or throwing notes into an Excel spreadsheet while you're on site. And I think that's also important to know that app does sync back up. You don't necessarily need to be live. I think you're going to go into that in the next slide. The vendor portal is where the vendors live and control their information. So it's no longer, hey, content holder X, we don't call it Polska, we call it Poland, or vice versa. So it's almost like they own their own data. And then the roster itself is essentially the place where the content holders go. And it's their smorgasbord. It's like Boolean search and also pull downs around regions and services and capabilities. So this is really this is the ecosystem segmentation of the TPN. All right, just before we move on, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's right. Thank you. So this is one of, this is a very early visualization. I apologize, it's an eye chart. But just conceptually, what we were trying to articulate here is that vision that I just mentioned in terms of data only ever existing within the confines of this ecosystem. So in this scenario here, you have a content owner on the far left-hand side submitting a request into the system. The MPA best practices are referenced. The CDSA maintains a very, very complex set of auditable controls that are not published. I'm going to get into that in the next slide. One of the pieces that I wanted to highlight on this slide is in the first phase of TPM, we're speaking predominantly about facility assessments. Vendor Y in Beijing is providing the following services, and they elect to undertake one of three types of assessments: a self-assessment, where they just simply fill in the pre-audit work packet and no verification is performed; a remote assessment, where a qualified assessor is engaged, they review the materials, they provide guidance on non-conformities and recommended remediation responses; and then the on-site assessment, where again a qualified assessor is engaged and they actually travel to the facility and conduct the assessment. And that can apply to each of the three. If you look at that orange bar in the middle on the main bucket, those facility assessments, the site security assessments as we refer to them, application security assessments in phase two, and cloud platform security assessments. And they're all interconnected. Our intention is over the next 18 months to tackle the vulnerability management objective, the targeted advisory objective that Dan referred to, by understanding in a lot of granular detail on the back end, if there's there's a SSL version 3 vulnerability, which applications are running that component, which business systems, which vendors are using those business systems, who's the IT contact, the security contact at that facility. Let's get a targeted advisory out to him or her, and let's follow up on that. Let's make sure that vulnerability is addressed and a response is recorded.
I'll say also, as you switch that, you know, I remember in the old days, you know, we'd send out these mass alerts, right, to all of our replications. So, you know, warning, they're using a cell phone camera, a new thing called a cell phone camera, on the floor to take pictures of codes, basically activation codes and stuff like that. But it was so blunt force, right? It was like, you didn't know if somebody read it, you didn't know if they even got it, you didn't know if they cared. You know, I think that's also something that, you know, from the early days, this is a need, and as the previous panel discussed, as the complexity of workflows continue to grow, if we don't do something like this now to start taking note of these systems, it could grow wildly over the next couple of years. All right, sorry.
Yeah. The issues of vulnerability management abound, but certainly just the shotgun approach that you refer to there, where you have access to just a ton of threat data, and then the responsibility is on your IT or your security teams to interpret which of those threats apply to which pieces of your infrastructure, physical or electronic, internally hosted or third-party hosted. Our intention is to assist, provide a service that helps triangulate and provide targeted guidance. Okay, so this is a really important part of the Trusted Partner Network. So the assessment verifies it's an objective measure of compliance against these in-scope controls. I'm going to get into the in-scope controls topic on the next, on the subsequent slides. What it doesn't equate to is an approval, a certification. That's still the discretion of the content owner to say, vendor X undertook an assessment. There are a number of non-conformities that were identified. The vendor elected to remediate 8 out of 10 of those issues. So the content owner will look at that assessment, they'll perform their study, and they'll say, based on the value of the asset that I need to disclose for this initiative, that's fine. I don't need Fort Knox security. Those outstanding non-conformities or those compensating controls are adequate for me, and therefore, as it applies to me, content owner X, that equates to an approval. Now that decision-making process in terms of understanding how assets are to be handled at a third-party facility or within the context of an application or a cloud platform environment. Also gives the TPN the opportunity to gather some feedback if issues, if there's some disparity between what appeared in the assessment report and what content owners observing in their follow-up, gives us an opportunity to refine the TPN assessment and reporting methodology. Now, again, apologies, another right chart. So I'm really going to fly through this one, but it is important to introduce at a high level the concept of authoritative sources, master controls, and derivative controls. As I said, at a relatively high level, we may have a number of different authoritative sources. For this example, we're using the MPA best practices that are published, publicly available. At our discretion, elect to map to other authoritative sources that may be industry specific, but may be NIST, ISO, any publicly available security control or standard. And the TPN takes that thou shalt not store PI, unencrypted, you know, whatever that high level statement may be, and we start to create an industry specific master control. And it could be verbatim, it could be localized to our industry. And then, and this is really important when you get into the concept of these qualified assessors. So we could theoretically certainly have tens, maybe even hundreds of qualified assessors around the globe. And we need to start to address orders of discretion. We want to be very specific about when we're performing an assessment in a particular environment, let's be articulate about how that workflow, how that vendor will conform to that security objective. So the TPN platform contains these mapped derivative controls. So if you're a visual effects vendor, you will have in-scope controls that are specific to the nuances of visual effects workflows. It won't be up to the auditor to say, in my experience, this is how you comply with this top-level best practice or this top-level master control. So over time, in fact, we're already over 1,000, you can have thousands of derivative controls. So it's really important that we drive automation through the platform. We have this concept of service category mapping. So when the initial paperwork is issued for an audit, the vendor will say, I handle these type of assets, I provide these services, and the system is immediately saying, okay, right, of the 3,000, 4,000 controls, there are 70 or 80 that are relevant to you, and these are contextually specific to the work that you do. So we're addressing the auditor discretion piece, and we're also addressing the questionnaire fatigue piece, or the audit fatigue. We want, when our partners are undergoing their annual audit, we want that time to be used to best effect. We only want to talk about controls that optimize content security objectives, and we don't want to be addressing controls or questions that are irrelevant. So yes, it's dense. I don't know, I believe we're making this deck available to you, so yeah. I won't go into any more detail, but if there are any questions on this, I just wanted to give you a little bit of insight into some of the machinery behind the scenes that's designed to optimize the assessment.
That dynamism also is also important, because if you think about the breadth of service providers to film and television, right? And where we really need to be. And we've done our best over the years with a very disparate group, content holders, individual firms, individual associations. I think ultimately it's important that the system be dynamic enough and also provide the mechanism for feedback, right, from all the parties. So it's not just the content owner sitting around the table and saying, this is what's going on, this is what's going on, this is what's going on. Or it's not just the auditors, the assessors going out there and reporting back in. It's also the service provider community. So again, it's meant to be that win-win-win. I've moved on from win-win to win-win-win. So anyways, all right. So the most important piece of this program is governed by Kurt, and that's our qualified assessor program. Kurt, give us an overview of what's going on in that one.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about why, and we talked about the mechanisms behind the platform and the machinery that runs it. But it all comes down to the people who
are part of this program and who will actually be conducting the assessments and providing that consistency that we talked about. So we need people who have subject matter expertise and who can be qualified to provide the consistency. So between their skill sets and the platform itself, which will help, you know, kind of sift through the multiple controls and get to the crux of what any given facility needs, this will help drive the consistency that will allow us to avoid the duplicative audits and to make sure that we're applying standards effectively. So to do that, we need a pool of qualified assessors. And the mechanism whereby we get to that is people will come into the platform directly, sign up to express their interest in becoming an assessor, and there's a significant vetting process that then takes place. So we're looking for assessors from around the world because we plan to be an international support system for the industry. And we then look for a specific set of criteria, and again, relying on, not generating something out of a vacuum, but relying on the community itself. We've put together a subcommittee which helped us develop this vetting criteria to make sure that the consistency will not only meet the needs of the vendor community, but also the content holders. The content holders wanted to make sure that they have strong representation and that an assessment performed by one auditor will be very consistent, not only in the questions that are, you know, reviewed in the iPad application, but also that they have the industry knowledge, that they understand the jargon and the workflows that take place in our industry, which might be very different than that which takes place in pharmaceuticals or banking or other areas where we do information security auditing. So we look at years of industry experience, we look at years of information security experience, we look at years if you had teaching experience, or there's a criteria around education, there's a criteria around the specific certifications for the kind of auditing that we're doing. So you might have one or more credentials in the industry, those would also be applicable. So if you've got your CISO or your CISSP, those would be things that we'd be looking at. So based off those criteria, we do vetting. There's then the examination that was referred to earlier, where we go through a set of multiple choice questions to kind of, you know, make sure that not only did you have exposure to the concepts to get your certification, but that you're familiar with the concepts specific to our industry. Upon successful completion of that examination and, you know, having enough points in all those other categories, we do continued vetting, where we actually do some reference checks and such to, again, make sure we've got a well-rounded vetted candidate who we could then invite into the pool as a qualified assessor. Those qualified assessors will be the ones that will be, you know, tossed out when you apply for your assessment in Mumbai and be part of that subset of assessors that you might want to choose upon. Additionally, we want to make sure that the assessments are taken seriously, and so we have the annual renewal process. If in the process of the assessments there are remediations that are recommended, again, you'll be able to draw upon that pool of qualified assessors to help you either in preparation for or in remediation of potential, you know, shortcomings in the content security area. The only stipulation is that the person who's doing remediation or preparation work for you is not the same assessor who actually does the assessment. But again, same skill sets, same pool of resources to draw upon to share and improve the community at large. The other factor that comes into play as we do the assessments is that the TPN itself doesn't get involved with the pricing models of any given assessment organization. So again, we qualify at the assessor level, not at a firm. So you could have a large auditing firm who sends half a dozen of their assessors into the pool to qualify, or you could have, you know, a small mom-and-pop shop, an individual assessor, a consultant in the industry, who also can qualify. And it's that diversity of backgrounds and the ability to know that to have been vetted, they have the consistency to perform the assessments, which will allow you the flexibility in pricing when you go out to Mumbai, you get your five assessors, and you get different quotes, or you go for an RFP. Whichever the case may be, you'll know that TPN has stayed out of that pricing model, and that's your individual bilateral discussion about how you price and get the best value.
Yeah, that's a great point, Kurt. I think what we're trying to do is create a framework that creates competition for you, and then it's up to you to take advantage of it. We really can't get involved in the, you know, in the, that type of granular pricing and contractual decision making. We do want to set something up that puts you in a good place and gives you options. And as Kurt said, you know, there's going to be different costs associated with doing something here or doing something in Mumbai or doing something in Beijing or South Africa. And so that's for you all to work through. We're just hoping to give you a pool of people and you can use competition to make it an efficient process.
But I think it's also super important to note, in the old days, there wasn't a lot of choice in terms of assessors. And by the way, regardless of who was actually funding the assessment, it was really where the rubber hit the road was with this program, was saying we're gonna have local people in all of these regions providing their day rate rather than what we negotiated at CESA with our auditing and assessment program, or what MPA negotiated with Big Four. It's important for the vendor community, and I'm saying this also kind of with my MESA hat on as well, to understand that this is a change. This isn't what we've expected in the past, simply because we did not have a pool to choose from that was broad enough, that had the expertise to come in and do it. And by the way, there are also cases where you would pay for an assessment and you pay a really low price in the past, and no naming of names, right, outside of our programs, and it wouldn't necessarily be really anything. It'd be a couple quick questions, I'll just sign off and we're going to run down the street probably not a plane, right? So I think it was our goal to make sure that we opened this process up to the marketplace of assessors, the marketplace of vendors, and drove the quality of the program as the peak, but we're leaving the pricing up to you guys. So in some of the pricing questions we may, if you start saying, well, what do you think is the average price of an audit? We won't be able to answer that. We do not know as TPN. So very, very important piece. And I didn't know if we had another slide here. I think we were talking about more about the qualified assessors group.
Yeah, so this other slide is just talking about the fact that the MPAA, part of our role here, is on the governance side. So in addition to actually conducting the exams and providing guidance around developing the pool of assessors, we're also going to be doing the verification of remediation work, so that before it goes into the platform, we're making an independent judgment around whether the remediation was sufficient. And additionally, doing quality checks on the assessor's work. So this is, again, part of the maintenance of a strong assessor pool and providing for that consistency. So if we're seeing assessments that are coming through, we go through and review them for accuracy, for logic, to make sure that it makes sense for the kind of facilities and the kind of work that's being done, and provide that extra layer of comfort and security to the content owners and to the vendors themselves, that they know they're getting a quality audit. We talked about the vetting already, and so again, that's kind of the crux of what
we're talking about. And I think, Kurt, that's going to be another big improvement to the added quality assurance and the quality control piece that comes out of our program. You don't see this with all programs. You know, from my experience, you take the bar exam and the bar could care less about the quality of your legal work unless you do something really bad.
And the same thing with the medical boards. But, you know, we're trying to accredit people and then do some follow-up, so we make sure that the quality of the work is solid.
Yeah, and I also think this is a big piece in terms of the workload of what TPM does. You know, the tool itself, the platform, is very automated. It's one of those things where it's meant to be automated. It's meant to get all the important stuff into a platform rather than email, right? We all know about how the evolution of collaborative software, getting things out of email, getting things out of a desktop-based version of Excel. I think it's really important.
Oh, I want to add one before we get off the quantified assessing topic, just quickly to note, we're going to have the website URL at the end of the presentation, but we are accepting applications for the qualified assessor program. So if anybody's in the room, either yourselves or if you know of anybody that would make an eligible assessor, the intake exams are currently underway.
Agreed. So the other thing, I was back to my point around the QC process, so to speak, is we're talking about scale, right? At our peak, right, maybe CDSA did 150 audits a year, maybe MPA did 150 audits a year, maybe Disney did 300 audits a year, Fox, Warner, Sony, right? But when you pull it all together, at the most, maybe it was 600-700 total, and that being very generous and
with duplication.
Right, with duplication, right? Because CDSA would do the same ones that content holder A, B, or C did. This idea with the annual renewal process is, as you come in, you're expected to renew every year. So we envision a future where almost every single vendor that is working with a content creator in our ecosystem, in our sphere, we're starting with movies and television, obviously, with the MPA and ACE, we've done them all. It may take us 3 years, 4 years, 5 years to get to that, but we should be able to, and again, Ben mentioned earlier, we have almost 2,000 records in the TPN system now in what's a status called unverified hold, which means we have 2,000 company names in there. We just haven't gone through the process, the TPN process of verification. And I think that's also critical to note, is it's really starting now with the TPN process. We're not bringing in old reports, we just brought in really high level information. Name, address, contact. We also brought in, we do know the CDSA certified facilities, obviously. That's important for us to maintain our quality of customer service at CDSA through the year transition as everything sunsets. But the reality is we could look at a time where we feel comfortable that we've assessed, so say the 2,000, maybe there's another 1,000 in there that we haven't got to, and then we start thinking about who's left? Who do we really want? You know, is there something, because it's also a learning management system and there's all these other features that we're really haven't even unlocked, we're kind of doing the old stuff first before we get crazy with the new stuff. You know, it could be caterers, it could be dry cleaners, it could be also outside of movies and television, it could be a video game company, it could be a record label company that uses some of these same services and providers. So it was really important, and this is also why it was important for us to name it the Trusted Partner Network, not James Dunkelberger, who came up with that name years and years and years ago. It was important for us to make it generic enough so it's not like, oh, this is the film and television assessor and auditing program, right? So that was something that was also very carefully considered in all of our conversations as this came up. How do we make it broad enough and start with where we really need to start? All right, I forgot what I'm supposed to be talking about. Actually, no, I got a slide. Okay, so I'm going to recap some of these. These are also very critical because this is really what's the benefit to a vendor within the Trusted Partner Network, and then of course what is a benefit to a content holder. I'm going to let you read through this. We said all these throughout this presentation, reducing the number of assessments conducted, reducing the number of different controls, creating that competitive, market-driven pricing, accelerating the turnaround of those assessment reports. How many people have waited for a couple of weeks while something happened where they couldn't actually get the information and they had to hound and chase the assessor and say, I really need this. We're trying to eliminate these things and go speed to market. Also, what Ben mentioned about offering controls that are specific to that environment. We always make the joke about the composer's living room. What do you do when you're going to audit a composer's living room? The tool actually works with that scenario, works with that situation. And then, of course, allowing the vendors to say, hey, this is it. You know, how many times have people erroneously said they are working with the MPAA or they've done this with the MPAA, and the reality is they may not have at all. This is a brand that you can rely on in the industry to say, ah, okay, I know, if I see that, I know where to go to find out what I need to find out about this vendor. So very carefully considered. On the content owner side, right, having that single directory is critical. There's actually a subscribe button, which is really cool, right? So say you work with the same 400, 500, 800,000 vendors, you subscribe to them, so you know, when's their next assessment coming up? What's a remediation item that has to go? It's like you're creating your own, like, my TPM, right?
Actually, there's a point to add there, that the vendor profiles from a content owner perspective really focus on the services that the facilities provide, who the points of contact are, but we are also starting to add in additional pieces of information. How many Atmos stages do they have? How many artists? You know, there's additional information that
have a phase, whatever it is.
Yeah, that the vendor can add to their profile to inform their clients and potential customers. And that subscribe button gives them real time. As soon as the vendor adds that information, they get an email pop up that says. Yeah.
All right. Let me see what else we have on here. Oh, okay. This is just another iChart chart. This is essentially. Dan and I left this at the end to also say, this is what our roles are, this is what we're doing as the MPA and as the CESA. Again, we're taking the best bits, and leaving our strengths on the table, and relying on our partners to make sure that we all come together and unite as a whole. I don't think we want to go through every single one on here, but ultimately, again, this presentation will be done, and I'm rushing also because I realize it's time to get a drink and to do a little bit of Q&A. So, to learn more, obviously visit ttpn.org, the Trusted Partner Network, was how we came up with that URL acronym, because we honestly think that this will be the Trusted Partner Network for our industry. And here are all of our emails. You're welcome to communicate directly with us. We're going to take a 2-second break, so if you haven't grabbed a beer or grabbed a glass of wine, go ahead and do so. And I assume we're going to grab one for ourselves, too, because we don't want to teetotal up here. But the idea also is think about your questions. What do you need to ask us? You have us all in this room right now. It's a rarity for all of our schedules to coordinate and combine. We're obviously using anything to do it. So go grab a drink. But if you've got a question, be sure to raise your hand. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity. We'll continue with Q&A in 2 minutes.